Inflation is looking stubborn, and all eyes are on the Fed. Here's what matters. Live from New York City, I'm Lauren Goodwin, and this is Market Matters from New York Life Investments. In this podcast, we bring you the best insights from across the New York Life Investments platform because we believe that by sharing perspectives and engaging with you, our listeners, we can all become better investors. Welcome, everybody. It's the week of March 18th, 2024, and today, Julia and I are talking about the longest, slowest, most painful slog in the history of economics.
A little dramatic, but I'm here for it.
And that slog is this cycle's disinflationary process. The slow march of inflation down from its peak of 9.1% year on year in the US in June 2022 to the Federal Reserve's target of 2%.
Inflation in the US and everywhere, but especially in the US, is top of mind for us always. But particularly because last week, February's inflation figures came in and they were stronger than expected for the second consecutive month.
It's also Fed Day on Wednesday, so let's talk about what the Fed is up against. Julia, why don't you give us a quick rundown of the latest data, then we can talk about what it means and how it squares with our team's expectations for the year.
Cool. February's inflation data came in at 3.2% year on year. Against a target of 2%, it doesn't seem too shabby until we point out the fact that inflation was reading at 3% in June 2023. So we've seen a plateau in inflation for the past 9 months.
And this plateau has felt particularly slow because from mid-2022 to mid-2023, we had a rapid plummet in inflation. So what's keeping price growth elevated this past 9 months?
At the very least, we can say that the problem child of inflation has been consistent. It's services. By services, we're talking about housing costs, insurance costs. You know, auto and home insurance costs right now are just wild, as well as transportation and healthcare costs. Now, these services have been the largest component of price growth, whether we're measuring price growth on a monthly basis or versus this time last year.
Any other problems?
The other issue is energy costs. For a while during that rapid plummet in inflation you mentioned in the back half of 2022, energy costs were deflating. And by this, I mean that costs were falling outright rather than just slowing their pace of rising. But this trend has now reversed and energy costs are now a net neutral when we compare prices to last year. And energy actually added to the monthly print in February.
Okay, so we know inflation is sticky. Now we know a little bit about why. Let's talk about what it means. First, I want to talk about the potential paths ahead for inflation itself. This is really important because when we look at what the Fed is expecting, what investors are expecting, it doesn't actually take very much in a month-on-month basis for changes there to potentially impact the markets. So February's inflation figure, Julia said it surprised to the upside, that was 0.4% month on month. January's was 0.3% month on month. Now, 0.4%, 0.3%, that doesn't seem like much price growth, but how does the math work out?
You're right, Lauren. It doesn't seem like a lot, but it is. If inflation kept coming in at that 0.4% month on month pace, each month for the rest of this year, we would end 2024 with an annual inflation figure of 4.9%. So that'd be an increase from 3.2% today.
And that type of increase, 3.2% inflation today, if it reaccelerated to something closer to 4.9 or 5%, that's a really challenging scenario for the markets, especially relative to expectations today. A reacceleration of inflation or a second wave, that has happened in past economic cycles, but only when the Fed has declared victory on inflation too early. And we don't expect the Fed to repeat that mistake in this cycle. We expect more of a moderate muddling through sort of inflation outcome, but we're certainly eyeing that upside risk, and so is the market.
Exactly. And if services and energy don't budge, those two problem children I mentioned earlier, it's harder and harder to see how we can avoid that really challenging scenario. But if there's a bit of give in these areas and we sort of muddle through in our team's base case, even a continued inflation pace of 0.3% or 0.2% each month would land us in a range of 3.8% to 2.6% inflation by year end.
The issue in this muddle through scenario is that that doesn't mean inflation moves back to the 2% Fed target. We would see by the end of the year inflation still outside of the Fed's mandate.
What's so interesting about that, though, is that in its latest economic projections from back in December, the Fed openly showed that it does not expect median inflation to get back to target this year. And since they're the policy setters, I mean, arguably they could theoretically hike rates up into oblivion, really cause inflation to crash, it suggests that an immediate return of inflation to target is not their goal because the policy isn't aligning with that right now.
Yeah, I hear that. You know, back in the pre-COVID era, inflation was stubbornly below 2%. And so policymakers said, hey, maybe we should let inflation run hot sometimes, have a little bit above target from time to time. And then when there are these periods of inflation below target, in the medium and long term, that evens out. It was meant to avoid a scenario where central banks were starting to tighten too quickly just because inflation moved from 1.7 to 1.8 to 1.9% inflation, given that that wasn't necessarily as harmful to the economy as central bankers had thought in the past. Now, that idea that eventually we would have a symmetric move around the inflation target, that didn't totally play out because then we immediately had the COVID-19 shock and the resulting inflation has been far from symmetric.
So the Fed is clearly comfortable with a very slow trudge back down to target inflation. I have a little bit of hesitation about this, which is that when the Fed is sharing its median projections, it does not show inflation staying around target until 2026. So that is 3 more years of above target inflation. That's 3 more years of price growth above what folks are historically used to. And that's on top of already inflated prices. Now, we are going to get updates to these projections in the meeting this Wednesday. These are quarterly projections. But I'd be shocked if that update showed inflation coming down meaningfully faster than 2026.
It's a good callback to something we've talked about a lot already this year, which is that consumers have seen no relief on price levels. Sure, inflation rates coming down has been great progress. The pace at which prices are moving higher has slowed. But there are no areas where prices have sustainably declined since the broad inflation peak a couple of years ago. So these price levels are still hurting.
Exactly. A few months of slightly less expensive gas was not a sustainable source of relief for people.
It speaks to the balance that the Fed is trying to strike here. Like you said, Julia, the Fed could theoretically send interest rates up to 20%, and I'm pretty sure that would bring inflation lower, but it would also have a meaningful impact on the economy as a whole, and that's a real balance they're trying to strike.
Officially, the way we see this work its way into the Fed's mandate is to preserve full employment, which implies a well-functioning economy. But Fed speak over the last few months has made clearer references to broad economic growth. So it's not formally in the Fed's mandate, but reflections of it certainly are. The Fed is now paying close attention to growth risks in addition to inflation, and the trade-off there means that price growth may not slow as fast as the market might like.
If inflation might not behave perfectly, we now need to talk about how the Fed would respond to that. There's been plenty of conversation, rhetoric on this topic in the past few weeks. A few weaker inflation and economic data releases at the end of last year had the market screaming for a Fed cut in March. And then after a few stronger inflation prints over the past couple of months, some investors are saying there will be no cuts at all this year. So, Julia, you've been able to get through some of that whiplash. What's your take?
First, just a word of caution on all the Fed prediction talk. Like you suggested, Lauren, these probabilities are really dependent on the latest piece of inflation data or jobs data or economic activity data like PMIs, which measure corporate sentiment, or retail sales. The data is volatile, And sometimes I feel like Fed projections are sort of a high beta play on this data, meaning that Fed predictions swing even more wildly than the data that they're based on. The Fed's funds futures market, I think I scrambled that a bit. The Fed funds futures market, try saying that five times fast, for whatever it's worth, and it's not worth a whole lot because it's got no track record for correctly predicting the path of rates, it points to a first cut in July of this year and up to three interest rate cuts by year end.
I just want to double click on what Julia just said. The market and the Fed themselves are historically very bad predictors of what the Fed funds rate will actually be. And that's because all the data we're looking at, it's the same. It's always changing. Conditions change. And they tend to change quickly from time to time. So nobody's particularly perfect at foreseeing or predicting the Fed funds rate. But with that being said, Julia, do you have your own sense of what you'd expect this year? And has it changed?
It has not changed since the fourth quarter. Our team has been calling for mid-year as the start of interest rate cuts. And I've been saying June specifically just for funsies.
It's a bit of a middle ground between those who expected March and now those who expect no cuts this year. So just maybe extending that a bit more, you mentioned that our team view hasn't changed actually as the data has been moving around. Why is that?
The dual mandate math has been pretty consistent. Inflation has been stubborn this whole time, and the jobs market this whole time has been pointing to an economy that at the national figures level does not need support yet. So our view for cuts starting mid-year implies that we'll see more visible labor market weakness in the coming months. Now, of course, we're not celebrating that. It's not good news for people, but it does show us what it's going to take when the economy would need systemic support.
That's right. And I will just say, we'll get to it more in the portfolio pause, I'm sure. But in the very, very near term, bad economic news, the idea that some indicators like inflation, like the labor market are slowing down, that can be good news for the market if the market expects cuts as a result. But as always, there are risks to our view, that perspective that the Fed will probably still maybe be cutting by mid-year. For example, there's a child tax credit that passed the House a few weeks ago. Looks unlikely to pass the Senate, but it's an upside risk to the economy because it would give some families more potential income to spend and could possibly pose a threat to higher inflation and interest rates. There's also a separate body of risks to any Fed view, which is the market itself.
Ooh, great shout. It's been a very strong-willed market this cycle, to say the least.
That's right. And it's understood that there have been many periods in which the market has led the Fed, as in market expectations for a given interest rate move seem to have influenced or determined what the Fed could do. And I think in recent months, the Fed stayed pretty resolute in face of an opinionated market.
I agree. We've talked about the overeagerness of the market this cycle, eager for policy support specifically. The market's been putting the whole when will the Fed cut conversation front and center since even before they were done hiking. And the market has reacted strongly to both strong and weak data prints.
Some of this is based off of very real concern about financial stability and banking sector health in light of recent commercial real estate wobbles. But we have yet to see anything particularly snowball.
So the Fed's taken a bit of a step back in the past few months and allowed the data to speak for itself.
That brings us to our portfolio pause, a segment of the program where we share an investment idea. And let me clarify before I ask Julia for her thoughts on a certain scenario. As we discussed today, our team does not expect a durable resurgence in inflation, just a slow, bumpy path downward. And that said, we've highlighted some of the upside risks to inflation today. So, Julia, how would you approach allocation if we did see that upside inflation scenario where price growth is reaccelerating?
It's a tough question, Lauren, because higher inflation could come along with a nice, strong economy, or it could be part of a stagflation scenario where the economy falters. The good news, though, I think there is a way to focus on the inflation side of things that's less dependent on what the economic growth path might be.
All right. How would you achieve that?
I would consider pro-inflation themes that are tied to longer-term or secular trends of activity, rather than the pockets of inflation that are tied to this specific cycle. So first, I have to say energy. The long-term themes this plays on are energy independence at the national level, and even the energy that will be needed to fuel tech innovation, including generative AI. Related but distinct are materials, which feed the infrastructure needed for both that energy independence theme and digital infrastructure themes. Then, this one might be a little bit surprising, but short duration high yield is an asset class I might consider here. Higher inflation is likely to support corporate revenues and profit margins, but keeping this exposure short on the duration side might reduce exposure to those cyclical economic dynamics.
Three powerhouse ideas. Thank you so much, Julia. Coming up next, as we've been talking about, it's Fed Week, so we will keep you posted on how to stay on top of Fed expectations and economic activity. But that's it for today. We'll be back next week for more Market Matters. In the meantime, please remember to give us a like, follow, or review wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you have a question or topic of interest, reach out to us on LinkedIn. You can also follow our views at newyorklifeinvestments.com/global-markets. Until then, I'm Lauren Goodwin here with Julia Herman, and we will see you next time. All investments are subject to market risk and will fluctuate in value. Diversification cannot assure a profit or protect against loss in a declining market. The opinions expressed are those of the Global Market Strategy Team, an investment team within New York Life Investment Management, LLC, and not necessarily those of other investment boutiques affiliated with New York Life Investments. This information should not be relied upon by the reader as research or investment advice regarding any strategy, and there's no guarantee that any strategies discussed will be effective. New York Life Investments is both a service mark and the common trade name of certain investment advisors affiliated with the New York Life Insurance Company, New York, New York, 10010.